It's time for the BallQuest Mailbag Podcast, answering your questions from the general's quarters every week, right here on BallQuest. Good Thursday morning, everybody. Welcome to the BallQuest Mailbag Podcast. I'm Eric Kane with Matt Ray, Rob Lewis, and Brent Hubbs. Big thanks, as always, to Exterior Home Solutions, our proud sponsor of the BallQuest Podcast. For a free estimate, give them a call today at 865-524-5888. Again, a free estimate for Exterior Home Solutions by calling 865-524-5888. I got a whole lot of questions to get into. Busy, busy recruiting weekend and week, and official visits right around the right on the docket. And of course, you have those summer camps, NIL event series going on this week, baseball in action. So a whole lot to get into. We'll go ahead and dive into some of your questions here on the Mailbag Podcast. Zeusify wants to know, what recruits did Tennessee make the biggest impact for over the Memorial Day weekend, Matt?
Yeah, you know, I think we've touched on a couple of these guys already, so I don't want to be repetitive here, but it starts with Amari Jefferson in my mind. I mean, I think Austin and I both mentioned that we thought Tennessee would get back to even with Alabama and Georgia heading into his official visit slate in June. He'll take a week off. He won't go anywhere this weekend. He'll play baseball. And then he'll start seeing these schools in June, and the Vols are going to get him last. And, you know, that's big for them to be back even heading into that. It feels like, to me, and maybe this is just, you know, some more of the intel I've got of late, it feels like it's shaping up to be more of an Alabama-Tennessee battle, but we'll see where things are when he comes out of that Georgia official visit. Tennessee definitely made a move there. I continue to think they show well for Melo Jones. That recruitment's going to go the distance. But the time that he got with Josh Heupel, Willie Martinez, and he just really enjoys the people around Tennessee. I think he felt like a big-time priority, and, you know, he's going to be back again for an official visit in June. He's going to see Alabama and Georgia as well. And then he says he's going to take this thing all the way to the finish line. So he'll see all those programs at some point, if not multiple times during the season. But the Vols, you know, had a good weekend there with him, and they continue to be in good spots for Bo Carter, Edwin Spielman, you know, those guys. And I think they, you know, the official visit with Sammy Brown went well. And then, you know, finally, I'll cap off one more other guy. I think Tennessee made up some ground with Amir Jackson, the tight end from South Georgia. He's not, you know, rushing towards a decision from the sounds of it. He should be back to Tennessee for an official visit. And that, if you're Tennessee, that's what you needed coming out of the weekend. You just needed to show well enough that you're in his mind to get him back for an official visit. As I think everybody had him, you know, penciled in to Florida's class now that Jaden Riddell and the Heinrich kid from Florida are both in Georgia's class, but that's not the case in my opinion.
Hey, Matt, on Sammy Brown for just a second. I mean, timing-wise, it doesn't seem great. Tennessee got him first. I know that's the only time he could visit. It's probably not a good thing. They set the bar high, which means everybody else knows they've got to blow it out of the water for him in the coming next 3 to 4 weeks when he takes visits. Even though Tennessee showed themselves well and helped their cause, do you think Tennessee's right in the mix, or do you still feel like Georgia's the lead dog there?
You know, it still feels like Georgia's the lead dog there, the more people that you talk to. It feels like Tennessee did enough to be firmly in that, you know, number two spot, and where do things go? To me, for Sammy Brown, you know, I'm looking at that Georgia official visit, right? He seems like he's been trending there for a while now. He's got two more official visits scheduled after that one. So if he goes to Athens and, you know, finishes out that official visit, comes back and, you know, continues to go see Oklahoma and goes to see Ohio State, then I think maybe you can start to say this thing really is going to be, you know, a decision in the end. But if he comes out of that Georgia official visit and starts canceling those trips or backing off those trips, then I think, you know, the writing's a little bit more on the wall. So I think if you're Tennessee, you need to see this recruitment go as long as you possibly can, right?
All right, we'll move on to Natch Falls 615. Tennessee's run defense was pivotal last year, forced teams to remain honest. Can it be on that same level? And who steps up with the loss of DJ Terry, Latrell Bumpus, and Amari McNeil, Rob?
Well, I thought the run defense was, you know, a very pleasant surprise last year. I agree with the poster that, you know, asked the question. I mean, they, for most of the year, I mean, they were right there with Georgia and Alabama in terms of, you know, yards given up, average yards per carry. And, I think you've got to give a ton of credit to Roddy Garner because it's not, they didn't have a bunch of All-Americans or, all SEC guys up there, and he got it done with a really deep rotation. I mean, as far as stepping up, every year it seems, Elijah Simmons is a name that gets talked about. I'm going to have to take a wait and see on that. I would look for Tyree West to take a step, after a pretty solid freshman year. I think you got to have Big O, have a big year. He's by far your most experienced guy up there. He took a step last year, and he's the guy that's got, he's got to show up and be ultra consistent, week in and week out. I mean, I think that's the one guy that you just can't have an off day from, up front. But he's Big O by far, my main guy. And I don't know if Tyler Barrett, I guess, plays, edge and inside. I think he's going to take a step. I think AP and Hubbard have both used one of their favorite phrases, contract year, from him. I think he's a guy we've all seen flash, all seen, show talent, but, hasn't done it on a consistent basis. Can he do that, this year and in the run game as well as off the edge?
Brent, I feel like it's not like you should expect it or count on it, and I'm not trying to be kind of rude, but to this point, with Elijah Simmons, we've heard it, we've seen flashes, but it's never been there consistently. But it's got to be him, right? Because when you look at the defensive tackle bodies, the ones, the threes, the shades, that was a point of emphasis where bodies were limited to begin with. Then you lose a couple of those guys, and most notably Deshaun Terry here a couple of days ago. I mean, he's got to step up. If not, you're looking, Devin Hobbs, the freshman, didn't see any time in spring, obviously, with an injury. Maybe he could be thrust in there just from a numbers perspective. But there's only about four guys interior, unless you go pass rushing, you can shift Barron inside.
Well, I think Bryson Easton's huge. I mean, yeah. Bryson.
Yeah, that's what I didn't mention. Good call, Hubbard. I left him out.
He's got to be better than 15, 20 snaps a game for Tennessee. I mean, this is the year where he's got to go. He's got to push 30, 40 snaps in that range there. I think the other guy nobody really talk about is Omar Norman Lott and what can he do. He was quiet. We thought he was quiet in the spring, but you talk to people in the program, Erica, and they feel like that he had a really solid spring and a good spring. So those are two interior guys in addition who can slide, who can slide in and well move around. I think for Elijah Simmons, the first test for me to see where he's at in terms of the contract years, he got to play it out and do those types of things the right way. I think the first thing there is going to be real simple, and that is, where's his weight when they open up? Did he lose the weight that he needed to lose? And all those things, I think, are the biggest question mark for him when you look at that question. Hey, I'm gonna go ahead and jump into Nashville's second question here. Just in some generality, Eric, because I think it's an important question. I don't want to avoid that question. I don't have specifics in terms of what does the NIL pool of money look like in terms of how much it is. I think it's going to shift closer to the $2 million range than the $10 million range overall. I think we're seeing the pendulum swing back a little bit. This idea that you needed $18, $20 million for your NIL deal, at colleges, I think is unrealistic. I don't think the money is going to be there. So I think we're seeing a shift back in that direction. So what does that number ultimately end up being? It's going to vary from school to school, but I think it's going to be more in the five and below category than it is going to be the 5 and 10 category year in and year out for an individual class. And then the second part is, how long before players officially get designated as employees, as many national folks think? I don't think that's going to happen, because you're going to get into antitrust, Rob. You're going to have to get into health insurance benefits, workman's comp. You got all kinds of things that you're going to get into if you're going to designate them as employees. So I just don't think that is ultimately going to be realistic when it's all said and done. I think they'll do everything they can to avoid. I'm not sure anybody in the country wants to designate them as employees, Rob.
No, and I don't. I mean, I think once you got past the top, eight programs in the SEC, the top five or six in the Big Ten, couple here and there elsewhere. I mean, I just don't think it's feasible. I don't know what everybody's balance sheet looks like, but I know the difference in the operating budgets, you know, at the top end SEC schools compared to, you know, somebody in Conference USA is tens of millions of dollars. I mean, I think I just don't, economically, I don't think that works the way the NCAA is currently built up. I mean, you talk about have and have nots. I mean, I think that's where you'd see a real split.
Let's go over here to Sam Smith, 22-33 on baseball. Of course, Tennessee beginning the Clemson regional with Charlotte on Friday night. Looking forward to bringing you coverage of that. Charlotte's normal Friday night guy through two times last week, 77 pitches on Wednesday, 94 on Sunday. Do you think we see him on 5 days rest, or who will Charlotte turn to? It's a good question because this guy, and I'm not going to try to pronounce his last name, starts with an H something, the guy that was at Kentucky last year, he pitched against Tennessee three times out of the bullpen. He was okay, picked up a win in one of those games, allowed a couple of runs and two innings and, you know, two thirds, I believe. But he's pitched in SEC ballparks before. He's pitched, I mean, not against the same team, but some of these same batters, Moore, Burke, maybe even Dickey. So it would make sense that they turn to him, but we'll have to see, because potentially an elimination game on Saturday, maybe another day's rest is when they want to turn to him. If they don't go with him, then, you know, look for Cameron Hansen or Colin Kramer. Kramer's a lefty who could potentially start that game. Second part of the question, how is Clemson's pitching depth, and do you expect lefty Caden Grice to get the ball for the Vols and Tigers matchup Saturday, or will it be right-handed Austin Gordon? Another good question. So you have Grice, who's one of the better two-way players in the country, first baseman, really good bat, but he's been really good on the mound as well, and he's pitched so well. I think he's 8-1 on the season. Typically, he's the Sunday guy, but if Tennessee and Clemson were to meet on Saturday, I would throw him if I'm Clemson, because Tennessee struggles against lefties, right? So I think that's what they would do, just in my opinion. But, you know, we'll kind of have to see. As far as the overall depth of Clemson's, you know, pitching, they're okay. They got a 4.30 ERA. That's top 25. That's top 25 in the country. They've got a whip of, you know, 1.41. That's top 50 in the country. They got a couple of guys who have, you know, 5-4 saves. They got a couple other guys who are swing guys who could start. But Tennessee's bullpen, Tennessee's staff, far and away, the best one on paper, you know, and that we've seen so far this year in this entire regional. So we'll have to see what it looks like. But anytime these teams can throw a lefty against Tennessee, and I would assume they probably would so. So I would look for Grice to maybe make that start Saturday if it ends up being Tennessee and Clemson.
Yeah, I mean, if they got a lefty with off-speed stuff, good off-speed stuff, even if he's not a heat thrower, whether you're Charlotte or you're Clemson, that's who, to me, if you're doing a scout on Tennessee, that's who you're throwing. Yeah. You're throwing a lefty with some good breaking stuff, because Tennessee's left-handed batters have struggled to find it for the better part of the year. I mean, I would think Tennessee's going to see the lefty both days.
Yeah, and that wouldn't shock me whatsoever. With Clemson as well, you know, we're talking about Grice because he's kind of fun to talk about in terms of a baseball player, but also Ethan Darden, who's been the Friday night guy the last month, 6 weeks, whatever, he is also a lefty. Now, his numbers aren't that great, but he is also a lefty as well. So I think Clemson would have plenty of options in terms of southpaws to turn to if they want to, you know, do that against Tennessee on Saturday. Let's move on now to some recruiting. Atheron's got a couple here. Over under 3.5 commits, Matt, by July the 4th.
That's tough because July 4th is such
a big day. Come on, Matt, give us some percentages, man.
On the recruiting calendar now, everybody wants to commit around the 4th, the 5th. right now, based on what I know, I'll take the under. Ask me after the June 23rd weekend of official visits, and it might be the over.
It's not the answer we're looking for, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, that's a toss-up to me right now. It could very easily go either way. That's a good line, though. I think that's a good. 3.5 is a good number.
You guys have had a chance to talk with Ryan Wingo a couple times this week, coming out of the weekend over there in Nashville. AP caught up with him. Anything new with Ryan Wingo, kind of trending towards Tennessee?
No, I don't think so. I mean, Ryan Wingo's continued to be a priority for Tennessee. He's continued to fill, you know, Tennessee heavily since late last fall. You know, this recruitment's gonna have its twists and turns. It's got a long way to go, in my opinion. He won't see the Vols and, you know, on an official visit until some point during the season. So I don't think there's a lot of new movement there with Ryan Wingo, other than Miami has entered the picture a little bit more here of late.
Would Lopa be a fallback option?
No.
So not a fallback option, the guy that Tennessee is very, very interested in.
Yeah, Tennessee's very interested in Kingston Lopa. And when you see him, you understand why. He's just a really, really nice-looking prospect.
Had a good trip up this weekend, right?
Yeah, had a good trip up. Can do a lot of different things. Can play, you know, defense, offense. And Tennessee's taught more receiver with him. But I think all possibilities are on the table for that kid at the next level.
And then this one kind of goes hand in hand. The last one from Athrun and from GBO Chicago. Gut feeling on the second running back for this class as of now. Like hearing that Peyton Lewis is texting other running back commits. Any other commits emerging as class leaders and peer recruiters? Kind of two questions I just threw at you, but on the running back, second running back in the class, and then peer recruiters.
Yeah, I mean, when AP and I talked to Peyton Lewis after the spring game in April, it was pretty evident that he was going to start training hard to Tennessee. He was already at that point talking about, you know, not knowing if he was going to – he originally wanted to decide after June official visits, and then he, you know, wanted to maybe decide around Memorial Day, and then where else are you going? The only place I'm going is Tennessee. At that point, he started talking about, you know, knowing that Tennessee wanted to pair him with another running back. And as we kind of talked about the different guys that Tennessee's involved with, the guy that caught Peyton Lewis's attention is Braylon Russell. 250 pounds. He liked the idea of some thunder and lightning type combination. But, you know, I think still for Tennessee, they're in a good spot with Braylon Russell. They made some ground up with Daniel Hill, but he's visited South Carolina a handful of times, and they're heavily involved in that recruitment. He sees a pretty direct path to the field there. Alabama's not conceding that recruitment when you talk to people in the know on the Alabama side. Alabama really wants Daniel Hill in the class. That's not too far from home. So it feels like Tennessee's kind of sitting third behind those two heading into official visits. And as we've said for a little while, you need to see where Daniel Hill's at coming out of official visits. But if you're Tennessee, you did enough to finally get him to campus and get him, you know, back on campus later next month. But to me right now, I think Tennessee's in the best spot for Braylon Russell. He's got four official visits coming up. So he'll see a handful of schools, including Tennessee, and then he'll decide mid-July.
I think that's the name of the handle. I can't see from here, but wants to know a little bit of Tennessee basketball. What role do you see DJ Jefferson having on the basketball team this year, Rob?
Well, I mean, I obviously yet to be determined, but my knee-jerk reaction would be to think that it would be kind of like Jemai Mashak as a freshman. You know, he's fighting to be at the tail end of the rotation. You know, we'll see. Maybe DJ has a great summer, and you know, and proves me wrong on that. I do like DJ's potential. I mean, he's I would very much compare him to Mashak athletically. Both, you know, similar frames, 6'5", 210, 215 pounds. DJ is, you know, every bit the physical specimen that Jemai is. But you know, also you think he's, you know, not there yet. And that's not a surprise. Tennessee took him as a developmental prospect. You know, he didn't play on the perimeter until he was a junior in high school. So a little, you know, further behind some of his peers in that way. So, you know, I don't see a big role for DJ this year, but that's not really a knock on him. And I think Jemai is going to eat a lot of minutes at the wing. If Dalton Necht is what you think he is, he's going to take a lot of minutes, you know, out there as well. If Danny, you know, shoots the ball like Tennessee expects, he's going to play a ton of minutes. And obviously Santiago is going to play, you know, 30 plus minutes on the wing. But I think DJ, if he sticks with it, I think he's got a nice future.
Another question here from the poster. Brent, this is going for you. Does Sammy Brown's recruitment feel similar to that of Vic Burley's last year, considering they both took official visits on Memorial Day weekend?
I feel like Tennessee's playing behind on Sammy Brown, and I think they put their best foot forward, as Matt mentioned and we were talking about earlier. I have a hard time ultimately seeing him not ending up at Georgia. I do think that, you know, Tennessee's probably drawn even with Clemson. He's been to Georgia more than people know. I mean, he's been down there for a couple unofficial, non-verbal, non-acknowledged, unofficial visits, if you will, to go down and watch practices or go down and see the coaching staff, even in this past month. So you know, again, I think Tennessee had a great weekend with him. I think they did the best that they could do with him. I'm just not sure it's good enough. So in that case, yeah, it may feel like Vic Beasley, because at one point Tennessee felt, you know, felt good about their chances with Vic Beasley, and it ultimately ended up being Clemson. So I can see the comparison there. Again, I don't think they've done anything wrong in recruiting Sammy Brown. They weren't late to the party. They had him on camp in camp early in his high school career. They've worked the East Tennessee ties with his mom's side of the family. I think they've done everything they can do. I'm just not sure at the end of the day it's enough to land Sammy Brown. And again, I don't think they've failed in the recruitment. I just sometimes when you're battling with those, Matt, you just don't land them. And that just happens.
Yeah, and again, like you said, he's been to Georgia a little bit more than folks know. It's 25 minutes from home. You know, their track record of development speaks for itself, and that's something Sammy's – you know, weighing in, you know, his process pretty heavily. For Tennessee, I mean, to do what they've done with Sammy Brown, I think you're absolutely right, Brent. If they don't land Sammy Brown, they didn't fail in the recruitment. There were so many things that, you know, he touched on and has touched on throughout the process about Tennessee that stands out to him, that shows you the direction that they're trending and things like that. Sometimes you just don't win those battles. It just happens. And there's sometimes Georgia doesn't win those battles.
I mean, he was on campus for that night at Neyland or whatever, going into the 2021 season, so that summer. So that would be going into his sophomore season, I believe. And the talk on campus that day when he was around was, oh, he's going to Georgia. So, I mean, it's like Tennessee's done everything right, but Tennessee's still been number two the entire time because of all those factors you kind of already mentioned there. Got plenty of more to get into. Questions on football, recruiting, basketball, a little bit of baseball. That is coming up next. But first, a word from Brent Hubbs, courtesy of our friends Exterior Home Solutions.
Your roof, it's the most important protection against nature for your home or your business. That's why I trust the experts at Exterior Home Solutions.
We trust them, and you should too. Let's jump back into it. This is a fun conversation to have, maybe not fun, but outside of Oklahoma, is there any level of college job that you think Heupel would maybe leave for one day? I mean, at the end of the day, you know, they, you know, money talks, but it doesn't look like Heupel wants to go anywhere. He's doing some good things at Tennessee, but how would you answer that, Brent?
Well, Rob, I think it depends on who your boss is. I think that's always can always be a factor when you look at things. Right now, everything seems to be in perfect alignment at Tennessee, Rob, which is a rare occurrence. But you know, you've seen guys move and take other jobs because they feel like that alignment has gotten away, or maybe there's a change at the boss. They're not that AD's guy or something to that effect. I think it would have to be some kind of scenario like that for Josh Heupel to think about packing up and leaving the SEC.
Yeah. I mean, when things are going good here, there aren't really just maybe even a handful of jobs that you could say are better than this one. And to me, most of that is about recruiting base as opposed to, you know, infrastructure or fan support or facilities or anything like that. So I'd be surprised if, as you mentioned, Brent, as long as the administration is on the same page here in Knoxville, I have a hard time seeing Heupel going anywhere.
It's pretty good place to raise a family, and it's not the most expensive place to live. And I think those two factors weigh in sometimes in some of those types of things. But again, you've got to feel like if the commitment's where it's supposed to be to win, and if it is, then you're right. I think Rob's right. This is a good place to work. If the commitment's not there or you're not all on the same page, it's a challenge, as it is at a lot of other places.
It always cracks me up. I mean, this isn't really on this subject, but when prospects come to town for the first time or whatever, you know, they'll talk to us and they'll be like, man, I just – Knoxville's so much bigger than I thought it was going to be. I thought it was such a small little country town. It's like
I was expecting cow pastures.
I mean, there are some out there where Hubs is from. But there are 550,000 people plus in Knox County alone, not even counting the, you know, surrounding counties and all that. So yeah, it's
I can remember when some guys were talking about, you know, they would land in Knoxville and then they would make that drive out Alcoa Highway, and you get down there towards Pine Lakes Golf Course, and it is cows and it is farmland to the right over there. And you're kind of like, wait a minute, what's that? And then about 10 minutes later, you pop into the city and see the river, and then they go, oh yeah, it's a real town. But yeah, there's a notion that this is, you know, that this place is just middle of nowhere, nothing. And it's obviously not the case. And I think Tennessee through the years has sold itself well, but You're right, Eric. It is funny. You're always going to find someone who says, man, it's a lot bigger than I thought. It's like a real town. Like, yeah, we really don't close and lock, you know, close everything up at dark. You know, God's not pulling the emergency brake on Knox County when it gets dark out there. We're allowed to go out after hours. So it's okay. There are things to do.
It's the second biggest market in the SEC. And also, the Alcoa Highway was still under construction at that point in time, right, Brent?
Alcoa Highway has been under construction since about 1990, 92, somewhere in there. It's long been under construction.
All right. Barb Shipdib wants to know, high, medium, or low likelihood Williams Winery is still on the board by the time of his Oregon visits, his only in-season official visit currently scheduled for September 23rd.
That's a really good question. I mean, he says he wants to decide after that visit. But my question is, and I haven't really got a good answer to it yet, how much is Oregon in play? I mean, I do think they're in play some. But right now, I still think it's Tennessee and Oklahoma with Texas A&M and Georgia and Oregon trying to shake things up. So he's going to see, you know, Tennessee and Oklahoma and Georgia, and he's also going to go down and check out Missouri during the month of June. Does he go back home in July and sit down during that dead month and say, hey, I've seen what I need to see. Let's get this out of the way. I think that's a very good likelihood. So I will say medium, I guess, but I don't think he's on the board. I don't think he's on the board that late in September. I mean, his recruitment is intense as it is already. I just think he ultimately sees what he needs to see during official visits and comes off the board, you know, sometime after that.
To Rocky by Far says, I know that schools like it would not want to add another SEC opponent, but is there anything preventing this situation? If SEC goes with the 8+1 model and Georgia and Auburn want to still play each other, could they schedule each other as a +1 for the Power 5 opponent, or is there something in the SEC bylaws that would prevent that? Rob, I don't think there's anything that would prevent that, but I think anybody would be crazy to do that, right?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that question as far as the SEC bylaws, but I would suspect that would, man, I don't know. However, would it, now that I start thinking about it, I think it might violate. I mean, if you have an 8-game conference schedule, if that's what you come out with, or a 9-game.
Well, I mean, you would have to designate it as a non-conference game,
like the SEC tournament.
Yeah, we just haven't seen that in football. There's some baseball teams around the country that play early preseason midweek rivalry games against an in-conference foe that's designated a non-conference game, if I'm not mistaken. I think the ACC does that a decent amount. I just don't see it in football.
I was going to say Ole Miss and Mississippi State, I forgot what they call it, but they do something every single year. They play a midweek in the middle of the year, but it doesn't count as an SEC game.
A couple of years back, maybe I'm thinking wrong here, maybe this was a possibility and it didn't happen, but did North Carolina and Wake Forest play did they not play a non-conference football game against each other one year, or am I thinking wrong on that? I know it was maybe talked about. One of them needed another game, and I don't remember if that happened, didn't happen. I don't remember how it weighed out. I just know there was a conversation about that at one point.
I don't know if that's happened. I just don't think in football that's going to be a common thing. I don't think Auburn and Georgia are going to agree to a home and home that's a non-conference game every year. I don't see that happening ultimately. And I think it's going to be fascinating to see if tomorrow afternoon there is a decision made on scheduling, or if this thing gets pushed on deeper into the summer with this deal, because as we talked about in the Tuesday podcast, there's a multitude of layers in this whole scheduling thing. And in classic coaches fashion, everybody's playing Switzerland, except for Eli Drinkowitz, who doesn't know what Switzerland is. He's got an opinion on everything. But everybody else is like, you know, Kirby Smart's like, this is the most overblown thing in the world. I guarantee you behind closed doors, Kirby Smart's had an opinion on something in regards to scheduling. But publicly, everybody's going to play, it doesn't matter to me, whatever. And then they're going to get in closed doors and they're going to argue themselves to the point that they may not be able to make a vote on Friday afternoon.
Bill Engvall says, as a head coach, Heupel's offenses have never ranked lower than number 9 in total offense in the country at the end of the year. Can we expect that sort of production in 2023? Rob, so much of that has to do on quarterback play, right? But again, with the system, I mean, they're going to be up there regardless. And so I expect it. I think you should expect around that for sure. But you do have to have a quarterback that can play in the system.
Sure, but I mean, he's had, you know, how many different, you know, guys as he had, it's not like he's had, you know, just Hendon Hooker. I mean, he's done it with multiple dudes. And even as an offensive coordinator, you know, he's done it with multiple dudes at the quarterback position. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, you got to get solid play out of Joe Milton, but I think that's kind of the standard. Now, I'm sure there'll be some year where his offense is not top 10 nationally as a head coach. But I would look for Tennessee to be right there again. I mean, even when they weren't that great as a team in his first year, I mean, the offensive numbers were still, you know, through the roof.
Yeah, they were top 10 in 2021. And so far, every year he's been a head coach, they've been top 10. So I'm intrigued to see, you're right, a couple years in the future, especially this year. Rocky Top T, how do offensive and defensive analysts work? Can they coach on the field of practice? If so, I think McKenzie Milton can help our QBs a lot. Brent Hubbs, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think Joey Halsley is a good quarterbacks coach, and I think that you've seen the production of Hendon Hooker and what he's done. You know, when Josh Heupel got this job, I assumed Josh Heupel was the quarterbacks coach, and that the quarterbacks coach title that his buddy Joey Halsley had was just a title to get him some more money, but that Josh Heupel would be kind of meticulous in every quarterback drill, and that's just not the case when you watch practice. When they're doing fundamental works, you know, and footwork drills and stuff, Joey Halsley's, I mean, it's his show. And I think the footwork of Hendon Hooker has improved and improved in his time at Tennessee. And I think you saw an improved Joe this past year. So, I think McKenzie Milton can help in some ways. But I think there ought to be a little more. I think he's a nice reference point for Joey Halsley because Joey Halsley has to manage the entire offense now. But Joey Halsley is a good fundamental quarterbacks coach. I mean, Milton's only going to help, that's for sure. But I don't know that it's a great transition or a big difference because I think Halsley's been very good.
TBR 9588, Caleb Beasley visiting Notre Dame. Is that anything more than a courtesy visit?
You know, I mean, I think if there was one school Caleb Beasley was going to visit at some point during the season, it was going to be Notre Dame. They've continued to recruit him hard. They continue to evaluate him during the evaluation period. They've continued to show him. I mean, they've continued to try to get him to campus. I think he'll take a serious look at him, during that weekend official visit. But, you know, I still like where Tennessee sits with Caleb Beasley. Marcus Freeman's recruiting him hard. He's taking an active role as the head coach in that recruitment. So Tennessee's going to have to recruit Caleb Beasley to the finish line. I mean, he's gonna, again, we've talked about this multiple times. He's going to do his due diligence. He's going to see some places. If that's the only one he sees, then, you know, that's a little surprising to me. I think some other schools have continued to swing there too, like Florida State.
What's the staff stance on commits who take visits?
I mean, you don't want them to visit anywhere except Tennessee, right?
But it's not like the old days anymore. It's not like the Dabo Swinney and the Clemson.
It's not the Dabo Swinney rule. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Brent Venables is trying to do that at Oklahoma still.
Yeah. Good luck.
You know, yeah. Good, I mean, like that's, luck. You know, like that's the thing there. And it's like, you know, from a Dabo Swinney standpoint, you can understand it. You've had that rule for a while. You've stuck to it. You've stuck to your guns. Like they still haven't offered a 2025 kid yet. Those offers start going out today. You know, if you're Brent Venables, you're year two at Oklahoma, and you're coming off a season last year, 6-7, 7-6, whatever you were, right around 500. You can't expect, you know, a kid to commit to you early, then hold them to that, in my opinion. You haven't earned that right yet. It's unrealistic in today's world.
I agree.
Especially with now, unlimited official visits on the horizon.
Well, and the NIL factor thrown in there.
Yep.
Coaches moving, coaches getting other jobs somewhere else and all those types of things. I think it's an unrealistic rule to expect a kid not to potentially take a visit somewhere else, or to say you're not allowed to take a visit somewhere else. I think ultimately as we move forward, if you don't relax that rule a little bit, you're going to end up losing somebody, you know, and when it's all said and done. And, you know, Clemson's gotten away with that. I think it's really hard for Brent Venables to pull that off, as you mentioned. As for Caleb Beasley, you know, Tennessee's going to recruit that one to the finish line and manage that however they need to. It's just that one's got to be a little bit maddening, because every time you talk to him, he talks about how he's recruiting for the class and he wants to be a leader in the class and the face of this and everything else. Yet he's going to go take and look at some other schools. So, you know, Tennessee understands that. It's been that way for a while, but that one's got to be a little bit maddening, but because he says all the right things, but then the action says, hey, I'm going to take a visit elsewhere, which just gives you enough pause to say, okay, we got to work this one all the way to December.
Yeah. He echoed those same exact, you know, words and phrases this week in Nashville with Austin Prize. So yeah, that's gotta be a little frustrating. A couple more here. We'll kind of run through. Glock Vols says, who was the recruit? This is a good question. Who is the recruit that Tennessee might have a chance to land now that wouldn't have committed here before the Memorial Day weekend?
That's tough. I mean, again,
Amir Jackson?
Some of those guys I touched on earlier, I think, are in that conversation. I mean, if it was ending right, you know, before Memorial Day, before they go here, I think Amir Jackson is probably the one that pops out right away. I think you've established yourself as a player in that recruitment and you have a chance to overcome Florida. They have their own, you know, troubles going on right now, trying to recruit and do different things. So I think ultimately, yeah, Amir Jackson.
Go Vols 182. Who is the fastest Tennessee player you've seen in person, Rob Lewis?
Man. Squirrel White's probably up there on the list, I have to say. Eric Berry can absolutely fly. Jonathan Wade was an absolute burner.
Cordero.
Cordero, especially for a guy whose size. I mean,
yeah.
We're talking about Jonathan Wade and you know, Squirrel White, and those are, you know, two diminutive dudes that were, you know, quick and agile and you know, top, you know, acceleration was off the charts. Cordero was a different cat, but those would be four good ones. I would say Jonathan Wade could really move. Cordero, obviously, and Eric Berry.
Yeah, Eric Berry ran a sub-4.4 with a cast on his hand at a Nike camp when he was getting ready to go into his senior year of high school. That was pretty good. Cordero Patterson, to me, of course, I giggle, so he's my guy. But the thing about Cordero Patterson that I was always amazed by, it's like he never slowed down when he cut. Like there was never a loss in speed when he was making a cut, some, you know, to the right or to the left.
That's a kick returner.
I mean, Leonard Scott was a blazing guy, straightforward. I mean, he could run straightforward, but did not have the wiggle. For Cordero Patterson to not lose any speed when he's shifting right or left at that size is pretty doggone remarkable, to be honest with you.
You know, I think it's one of the more underrated conversations in football is how the punt returner is a different type of player than the kick returner. Now, you can have a guy who can do both. Valus Jones learned how to do both, and he turned into a pretty decent punt returner. But, like, Squirrel White is like a punt returner. He can kick return, but he's more of a punt returner. You got to have wiggle. You got to have shake. You know, kick returners got to have vision. Got to have speed and that ability, like you mentioned, to, you know, not slow down when you're making a cut, because there's a lot of lateral movement in punt returning, and it's just interesting. I like special teams talk. That's
all. Yeah, go ahead, man.
You have to be crazy to be a punt returner. Period. End of story.
You got to be crazy to play, but you got to be crazy to run down the field full speed. I mean, it's not going to be in the game in 10 years.
I mean, just to stand back there, just waiting on the football, and then to know what's coming in the SEC. Heck, I couldn't do it in high school. If you go turn on my high school tape, you watch every punt that they punted to me hit the ground. Let alone this, you got to have a different mindset. Like, I don't know. I mean, to have the focus and the ability to catch that punt and know what's coming and then make something happen, it's just that position is just totally different to me. Kudos to whoever can do it.
Yeah, I will say this too about athletes. I don't know what the speed numbers are, Rob Lewis, but Dale Carter could have played any position on the football field for Tennessee. I think Dale Carter could have been a tailback. He played safety. He went to the NFL and played corner. He could have played wide receiver. I don't know that he ever fielded a punt in the air. I think he got most of them off the hop, off the turf. But when he did, like in a mass heap of people, he seemed to come out the other side. Dale Carter was one of the elite athletes to have ever played at Tennessee. I don't know what his 40 time would have been, but he was crazy, crazy gifted athletically. Maybe the best, arguably the best athlete we've seen come through here in the last 35 years or whatever the number is now. Really good. Really crazy good.
Matt, do they have huddle tapes back when you played, or were you burning CDs?
We were burning CDs, buddy.
I didn't have any highlights, so I wouldn't know about that life, but I would have burned a CD as well.
I'm so old, you used to watch it on VHS. The colleges mailed out a VHS tape to the high schools, hoping that the high school coach would dub something down on a VHS tape and send it back in. That's the original recruiting I used to cover. I'm pre-DVD. That's how old I am.
All right, two more recruiting ones, and we'll call it quits. Action 0212, how many commits can the Vols take total? Surely they'll leave a spot or two for transfers. Matt, Rob, that changes frequently depending on who's on your roster and who's left.
Yeah, I don't think there's a real answer to that right now. I mean, you're going to keep spots open for transfers. Obviously, they've done it every year, and you know, programs across the country are going to it. And that number just changes so much, in my opinion. We'll see.
And what does that number look like after the NCAA makes a ruling?
Yeah, exactly. You know,
and you know, you can have conversations to see if somebody can go look for opportunities elsewhere as well to create another spot too. So, last one. We can go around the room if you want. If you could only pick one to be a Vol, who do you got? Wingo or Matthews? Matt, I know your answer is Mike Matthews. What about anybody else?
Well,
I was just going to say Matt knows a lot better than I do. But I mean, with everybody being on campus here, I've watched watched both of their film here the last little bit, and I just, 6 of 1, half dozen the other. To me, I mean, I don't think there's a wrong answer.
Yeah, there's not a wrong answer, Rob. I mean, that's the thing for me is, you know, I've been open about, you know, I like Mike Matthews, what he can do. He's a special recruit. But at the end of the day, there's not a situation where Tennessee's picking one or the other. If they both want in, they're taking both of them. So there's no, you know, wrong answer to that. To me, you can look at it a lot of different ways. I mean, Mike Matthews is closer. So in the day of the transfer portal, is it easier to keep him on campus if he's a little unhappy, you know, versus Ryan Wingo? Yeah. They both do different things. Ryan Wingo attacks, you know, the football more vertically downfield. Mike Matthews can too, but, you know, he's really good across the middle. I just think it's, you know, you're never going to have to pick if you're Tennessee. If you can get both, you're taking both, and you're calling it a day very happily.
And both of those style of receivers have flourished in Tennessee in two seasons with Josh Heupel. We've seen it from, you know, a guy like Valus, and then obviously a guy like Hyatt the year after. So that's from the same position as well. So, but if you had to pick one, I guess I would go Mike Matthews. But you know, Brent, would you go Matthews if you absolutely had to pick one though, just for entertainment purposes?
No, I don't have to pick one, so I don't want to be entertained. I'm taking both of them.
It's not how you play the game. All right.
Hey,
well,
it's my game, and I'll play it however I want to play it. Right? I'm not picking between those two because you're gonna take both of them. You're not gonna sit there. I mean, you're never gonna be in a number situation where you go, okay, we got one spot left. Which one of these two do we want to take? So it's kind of a. I mean, I guess he's trying to have, you know, it's a fun question, but it's a pointless question because they will make room to have both of those receivers in this class on this football team. So you don't have to pick. You don't have to. It's like picking between steak and fish, right? I can do surf and turf. I can have both of them. Why do I have to pick?
I mean, there's a clear and obvious answer to that question right there. It's steak, 100%. But that's
why, when you can have both, why are you not taking both? Right, Rob Lewis?
I'm not doing surf.
Yeah,
and
I mean, somebody. There might be a hard conversation had with somebody in the recruiting class if Wingo and Matthews both wanted to come, but that conversation would not be had with either one of them.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Appreciate you guys for sending us all these questions here today for the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast. Every single week is presented by our friends Exterior Home Solutions. You can see them online at exteriorhomesolutions.com or give them a call today for a free estimate at 865-524-5888. For Matt Ray, Rob Lewis, Brent Hubbs, I'm Eric Kame. We have so much coverage over at VolQuest.com right now. Recruiting updates from the weekend, 865 Live. Recruiting updates, AP's got us from Nashville with the first of its kind on three NIL Elite Series. So that's been a whole lot of fun. Baseball coverage coming up this weekend. All the news from Tennessee football back on campus. Notes for Tennessee basketball. No better time than right now to join us over at VolQuest.com. Again, for the guys, I'm Eric Kame. Appreciate you guys for being here and sending us those questions. And enjoy the rest of your Thursday, everybody.
You've been listening to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast every week right here on VolQuest.